Welcome to Life as a Patient Doctor, where we transform my blog into an audio experience. I'm your host, MedPsych Moss, navigating healthcare as a patient and a future MD. Embark on a journey of vulnerability as we uncover the realities of trauma and developing resilience. Hit that follow and join us on this extraordinary life as a patient doctor. And now for the show. Hello, everyone. Today, we'll be going back to the blog post titled Fertility Preservation During Medical School. So if you didn't see part one, go back and click part one, which talks about my experience as a medical student going through ovarian stimulation with the goal to freeze my eggs and actually my embryos. So where we left off, we went through all the medications and injections. We're going to start off at week four, removal week. 4 weeks to get through this procedure. Usually it should be like 2 weeks. That's what they recommend you put aside. But the reality, it can take up to a month to get your body fully ready to remove those follicles. So I had 2 weeks off in my third year of medical school, which I planned for the removal. But 2 weeks before that, I had to prep, taking vitamins, protein, getting my body ready, and started some medication. So I did start it, unfortunately, slightly earlier during one of my clinical rotations. Again, go back to part one to learn more about it or other blog posts where I actually wrote down a lot more information on my own experience and why someone would go through a follicle stimulation or fertility preservation. About 2 weeks before the actual removal, I barely slept because I couldn't find a comfortable way to sleep. While laying on my right side, my larger left follicles on my ovary would weigh down, causing a mix of sharp and dull pain across my abdomen because I have also endometriosis. I then seemed to wake up every couple hours to urinate because my bladder did not like the extra pressure and stimulation. I'm thankful I had my maternity pants to wear during my blood draw and ultrasound. There's a picture of me with right before I did my blood draw. So right before, there was also a lot of blood draws to see where my hormones were at based on the injections and medications I was taking. Okay, week four, removal week. I have a picture of my ultrasound where you can see my ovary that has just huge, big black circles, which means that those are the follicles that have now been stimulated with the hormones that I've been injecting myself. Okay, on Monday, we counted 9 follicles on my left ovary and 5 on my right. Apparently, they only count the follicles that are over 1.5 centimeters or 17 millimeters in diameter because they have a greater chance of containing a mature egg. So the follicle on the ultrasound, it just looks like a big black circle because most of it is fluid and you can't even see which one on the ultrasound has an egg. Through research, they found that the ones that are bigger are have more likely a chance to have a mature egg and it'll be better for freezing. I was like, I don't know what 1.7 centimeters is. So I put down to compare 19 millimeters or 1.9 centimeters is about a penny. And then 1.3 is about a size of a marble. It's between a penny size and a marble. So you can get an idea of how much those are. And if I had 9 of those, it's like 9 little marbles because they're three-dimensional. They're not flat like a penny. Think about having marbles, multiple marbles on each side of your lower abdomen. That's why it was so uncomfortable. Now, it's not always supposed to be, not everyone states that it's uncomfortable. Sometimes it just feels odd. But for me with endometriosis, it was very painful. Based on these follicles, when we added up the volume, it was about 22 centimeters cubed of volume. And I have a picture of all my follicles with the actual size and the estimated volume. Next, endometriosis symptom flare. I wrote, My current estradiol level is above 1200 and is the most painful, nauseating, and uncomfortable experience. Walking up the stairs to my apartment, which was on third floor, almost caused me to topple over. It was really uncomfortable, especially as it got closer and closer to the date that we'd go in and remove the follicles. That's really where they recommend you not do extensive exercise. If I was in clinicals, like I would have really asked for accommodations to sit out, to do more note writing. That way I wouldn't feel so uncomfortable. But thankfully, I didn't need to add in extra accommodations to my current accommodations plan. However, that is always an option and something I definitely would have pursued even more if I had probably thought about it. I didn't even think about it at the time. There was just so much going on in my life. But thankfully, I did have accommodations for my endometriosis. So by just saying like, hey, I need to sit down, I'm going through a medical procedure, everyone was really kind about it. And then if I actually wanted to disclose, I'm going through an IVF cycle or follicle stimulation, I was surprised at how like understanding people were, especially like female residents that they had gone through it themselves or they had friends who were going through, especially OB-GYN. That was definitely the easiest one to disclose, like, hey, I'm going through follicle stimulation. They're like, oh, I get it. Maybe because they've done it or they have patients who go through it. Next section, delay in removal. After the above ultrasound and blood draws, my procedure was rescheduled to Wednesday. That means that tonight, which was on Monday, I will do the leuprolide trigger shot. Leuprolide is a GnRH agonist, which tells the pituitary up here to release a surge of luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone and to trigger final egg maturation and ovulation. Now, the goal is that they don't fully ovulate, that the surgeon can go in and remove them right before they actually ovulate, because if they ovulate, just be lost in the abdomen or going through the tubes. Tuesday morning, I'll get my progesterone level again checked and might have to do a second leuprolide shot depending on my hormone levels. And thankfully, I didn't have to because the day before the removal, I put down progesterone level is adequate, yes. So I don't need to do a leuprolide shot. Spent the day relaxing and doing some TLC, like getting a new haircut. And I have a picture of my new cute haircut that I did that was definitely relaxing, especially if you're going to go through a medical procedure, any type of medical procedure. It's good to just relax and take care of your mental health. Next section, follicle removal day. So I'm going to walk through kind of like a time period of what it looked like. 8 a.m. I arrived, but this time it was a separate surgery center, which I thought was interesting because I've never been to a private surgery center before. I had a different clinic before. It was actually at the hospital I went to my medical school. So it was really weird to show up. At 8:30, I was taken back to the pre-op room. And then my husband also provided the sperm to the laboratory. At 8:45, I got a gown. I was given an IV with lactate readers, fluids to keep me hydrated because I think I didn't eat for 12 hours before. And then I also had antibiotics because they're sticking a huge needle in. Any type of procedure like that can introduce bacteria, so it's always safe and they always add antibiotics. I said this before in my previous episode, but I'll say it now. I'm a medical student, not officially a doctor. And even then, this is my own personal experience of going through infertility and follicle stimulation. This is not advice. This is not exactly what's going to happen to every person who goes through a follicle stimulation removal, just to share my own personal experience. Okay, go back. At 8:50, I met with the anesthesiologist and the surgeon. Which actually I was really sad that it wasn't the specific surgeon that I had closer relationship with, especially for these follicle stimulation, you kind of just get whoever's on call. So every single day is a different surgeon from the clinic. You don't know exactly what day your ovaries are going to be ready. So not all the time the surgeon that you met with, the fertility specialist, is going to be the same one that removes it. I wish it was, but unfortunately it isn't. At 9 a.m., I emptied my bladder for the last time and walked to the procedure room and laid down on the bed. never done that before. I've always been carted in a cart. They had me walk into a little room, which was a little weird, but that's what happened. At 9:05, I was given anesthesia through my IV. I do remember that because I was even like asking, like, what are you giving me? Are you giving me ketamine, propofol, like naming all these different things that when I was a third year medical student, I like hung out with the anesthesiologist for a bit because it was the best place where I could sit down or just talk instead of standing up and holding a retractor. That was just too much for my body. So it was really nice that I was there, like, to combat my own fear. I started like just chatting with the anesthesiologist, like asking about what she was giving me. And then it was really awkward because I'm like still awake when usually in like a previous procedure, I don't even remember that happening. They definitely gave me the anesthesia before I went back into the room. So this one was a little more awkward because up to this point, I had already seen a little bit what happens to patients who go in. I know that they would put my legs up in stirrups, and I was definitely pretty embarrassed and like freaked out about that. And so thankfully the anesthesia could tell that I was just chatty, and she definitely helped me relax and go to sleep easier. But I helped them put my legs up in these massive stirrups, which like went over your thighs and really spread you apart, which was kind of stressful. And I can see how it could be traumatic if someone has sexual trauma. So be aware of that. Ask to maybe be put under before they do that procedure. It just gives them a better angle to go in with the huge needle. And at 9:30, I woke up and text my husband that I'm dumb and loopy. I put an M, not an N. It was funny. And hey, that took 25 minutes for them to just go in and remove it. And I have a picture. I knew I was going to be in a lot of pains, and I was when I removed it. So I asked for a lot of heating packs, a lot of pain medication before they let me go, just because I knew that last time I did it, it was a very bumpy ride and painful. I remember the first time I went through this, I was very nauseous and in a lot of pain. That night, the first time, I ended up having, later on, I found out that I had hyperstimulation ovarian syndrome. So like that night, the first time I did this, I actually woke up in so much searing pain. I vomited and I felt very hot and I was having difficulty breathing and my chest was hurting. And so I ended up going into the ER because I was worried that something was wrong. Maybe I had like a pulmonary embolism. Fortunately, I did not have a pulmonary embolism. Unfortunately, they could not figure out why I was in so much pain and not feeling well. And it wasn't until the following day that I went to my infertility clinic for like a follow-up check. And then they were like, oh, you have hyperstimulation ovarian syndrome, which means that there is a lot of extra fluid in your abdomen post the removal. And that's what was causing me so much pain. And then when I laid down, the extra fluid in my abdomen would push up on my diaphragm and push up on my chest a little bit. And that's why I felt out of breath. So I didn't have a pulmonary embolism. I just had extra fluid from not having enough protein in my diet. Unfortunately, it's a rare side effect of this procedure, and I wish someone would have caught it earlier. But lesson learned, for the second time, I made sure I ate enough protein every day, and I really watched myself for those symptoms. Going back, I was so happy to find out that I had 30 follicles removed. And in those 30 follicles, there was a total of 23 eggs, which is pretty awesome. Compared to last time, I definitely did not have that many. And I really think the last time it didn't go so well because the protein, I didn't have vitamins. I was under a lot of stress because the first time I did it, I was on my leave of absence. Look at my other podcast on leave of absence to learn about all the stress, financial, educational, that I was failing step one. Just so much stuff was going on in my life that it definitely had an impact on my follicle stimulation procedure. And stress can have an impact on your physical and mental health. And especially, it can impact the amount of follicles that you have. Because if you're super stressed, think about in nature, your body shouldn't be worried about making eggs to reproduce. It wants to just deal with the stress that's going on right then and there. So this time I was really careful with my own body, making sure that I was also taking care of my mental health. Even though I was a clinical medical student, I made sure that I had some time off where I could really just relax and focus on these medications. And so that was really important. Now, I would have to wait a couple days to see how many embryos would form from all these eggs. What they did is after they had the eggs, they put together individual sperms. Now, I didn't do genetic testing. You could do that. We might do it later on, but we didn't need it for this stage. So you can actually go in and the endocrinologist can take a little sample of those eggs or when they're together, the embryos, and actually check if there is specific genetic mutations. Like, for example, if you have a gene that's pretty dangerous and you don't want to pass on to your child, that could be something. Thankfully, we did do a genetic testing on myself, and I found that I didn't have any of those recessive, scary genes or any dominant genes that I could pass on. So there wasn't a need for us to do it at this time, but that is an option. So we did have to wait a couple days, and we were very happy to hear that 9 embryos were formed. And so once those were formed, we had to wait 5 days to see which ones would actually split to progress into a blastocyst. That's been found that it's the most amount of small little cells that have split to a proper form that can then be frozen and can be unfrozen later on at whatever time period you want. I was very happy. 5 days later, 4 embryos actually left a blastocyst stage. And I think like 10 days later, I actually found out all 9 went to blastocyst stage. So we were very happy about that because last time I only got 1, which was really heartbreaking, really sad. I wrote a blog post on it that it has like an apple because it was like my only embryo. It was really sad. So that's why I did this a second time. I have a really great picture on this blog post from my endocrinologist and fertility specialist that broke down why it's so hard and why you have to make so many follicles and so many eggs. She says that 1 to 3% of IVF follicles, no embryos will develop. And so that's why they try to get as many mature follicles as possible. And a lot of people have to do this multiple times because there's a less and less chance for an egg or an embryo to actually get to the next stage to be appropriate to either put into the body or to freeze. You can look at my picture online. Post-removal week, I wrote, there was still some pain around my umbilicus and low abdomen. So I did use my Intimate Rose pillow while driving and, of course, my maternity pants. And I took a picture of this really cool pillow that can prevent the pressure from the seatbelt. I didn't write this down, but now I'm thinking about it. I had a conference scheduled in St. Louis. I actually drove some of my classmates to the day after. And thankfully, even though I didn't have hyperstimulation ovarian syndrome, I still was not feeling 100%. I felt so bad for those other medical students. I remember driving and just getting so nauseous. And I actually started vomiting in the car while driving. It was so embarrassing. And I quickly pulled over and just grabbed my Zofran, which is medication for anti-nausea, went and got water where I could like swish out my mouth and brush my teeth. It was just awful. But thankfully, I felt a lot better after that. And definitely wish that the conference was later that week, or I maybe should have been like, no, even though I paid for this conference and it's a really cool conference, I can't do this. I'll do it another time. But I made a decision. I guess that's what we do in, as medical professionals, especially as medical students and doctor, choosing our life versus our health versus our career. And the biggest thing I've learned throughout medical school is how important I have to put my health first. But even then, sometimes I do have to weigh the pros and cons and see if my health can take it and I can push through a little bit. But definitely, it's something I'm still learning and still improving. And I hope I can still do better during residency of valuing my health and knowing like when is too much for it. I wrote a little thing that I'm actually going to move up to the top of this blog post, but it was some emotions that I had during my OB-GYN rotation, because at the same time I started like this fertility preservation process, I was prepping and getting the medications ordered, calling insurance, like that takes months and months beforehand. I was doing all that while doing my OB-GYN clinical rotation. And so it was really emotionally challenging. So this is what I wrote in my journal. I can't believe the emotional roller coaster I've been through during this OB-GYN rotation. I have gone from pure joy and happiness to jealousy and sorrow. I'm frequently reminded of my own infertility and medical conditions like endometriosis. Sometimes it makes me want to jump to start having children just like them, especially when I am in labor and delivery and helping patients or their first moments where they're taking care of their child. So that was really hard emotionally. My upcoming stimulation reminds me I could just place those little embryos in my uterus to start to grow. However, intellectually, I know that having a child right now is not financially nor cognitively good decision for me and my career as a physician, and also my husband as he was a fourth year medical student at that time. So he was applying to residency. There was a lot going on in his life too. And this is sad that I wrote this. No residency will want a pregnant patient or a new mom, which I wish I didn't write that, because that is not true. There is a lot of stigma in medicine, but thankfully a lot of specialties are really trying to support their residents, either having maternity leave, supporting their residents if they have a new family or if they are pregnant or just pregnant. But it is true. It is still a stigma, especially in fields like surgery or ones that they really depend on you and your time. They maybe can't support you if you need to take time off, even though it's a requirement by law. I wrote, I've already seen the mess it has caused other interns when they have to stress between breastfeeding and also charting between patients. That's true. I did have an experience where I had an OB-GYN resident and then also a neurology fellow, a pediatric fellow, and I think a psych intern, who were different ones at different types during my third year that were breastfeeding. And they were so stressed. And it was really hard for them because they had to jump between trying to find a safe space to lactate. They had to find a place to keep their milk at the proper temperature. They had to wear special clothing so it wouldn't like leak out into their clothes while they're taking care of patients. Like, it was definitely hard for them emotionally. I'm not saying this to discourage people from having kids during their medical education. It does work. It does happen. It is possible. I have a lot of other students and friends that have gone through it and they've been successful, but it is definitely an additional stress. If you actually have gone through fertility or infertility during medical school or your medical education, or have gone through having a baby or doing IVF, I would really love to hear your story. So please send me a message or email on medpsychmoss@gmail.com, or you can go through my website, medpsychmoss, because I would love to have you on the podcast and share your experience, because I can only share my own experience going through my infertility and stimulation. So I would really love to hear your journey and share this experience, because this is unfortunately not talked a lot about in medicine. And the only way that we can improve and break down stigmas and break down barriers is to talk about it. So please send me a message. I would love to have you on the show. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening, whether it's that Spotify, YouTube page, or Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or anywhere else you're looking. Make sure you also rate, because that helps other people find the podcast. And you can also follow me on all social media at MedPsychMoss. I look forward to seeing all of you. Take care.